Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did one of his buddies.
He doesn't solve the issue then.
He did, and he's usually extremely lax about that stuff.
How do I go about disposing of couches and sectionals?
What we recommend is you just cut them in your office. That one, something for the big ones and four for the small,
I'm
Sorry.
Any questions for tonight?
That sure looks like one of those.
Give it a one. We're going to try to do. We'll try to enforce a record in the meeting next month.
Hello, Brenda.
There's no TV.
Hello. Hello.
Hey, Paul. Item 7.
Roman numeral 7. Yes. Yeah. Good of the order, you mean? That's 12. Okay. Special committee report.
That's special committee report.
Yeah,
Steve.
All right.
Are you going to speak to that?
It was a committee of whole kind of thing, so.
Was that the training?
No, that was
the training. Okay, so that's easy.
Oh, okay. That'll work.
Okay, thank
right.
you.
The same day. That's why I probably got that full pass.
All right, I'll call this March 2nd, 2020 meeting of Moorville City Council to order. Tonight will be led in prayer by Pastor Geraldo Nunez.
Heavenly Father, I thank you for this day. I thank you for the opportunity to serve. I would like to thank for these men and women that are in the room tonight. Just ask that to open their minds and their hearts, that the Holy Spirit can help them to take the decisions that they need to do to make this city thrive, Lord. Thanks for everything that they do, and thanks for your Son that he died for us and gave us eternal life. Everything I pray and I ask, in the name of our Son Jesus, amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You call the roll, please.
Hamer.
Here.
Sparrows.
Here.
Morrison.
Here.
Mosley.
Here.
Carosa.
Here.
Widmer.
Here.
Wilson.
Yes. Here.
You had a chance to review the minutes. Any corrections or additions to the minutes of the last meeting? Seeing none, may we have a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll make that motion.
Thank you. Mr. Carosa?
I'll second
that. Mr. Morrison seconds.
Sparrows.
Yes.
Lorson?
Yes.
Mosley?
Yes.
Carosa?
Yes.
Widmer?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Hanberg?
Yes.
Thank you. We have no public comments scheduled for tonight, so we'll move to our standing committee reports. We'll begin with our Parks and Recreation Committee Chairman, Mr. Hanberg.
Thank you, Mr. President. We do not have a report at this time. However, there are a lot of things that we'd like to address, and we'd like to schedule a committee meeting next week. Tentatively 8:15 to 9, depending on how long the session goes before.
All right, very well. So we will have a Parks and Rec Committee meeting immediately following our budget workshop next Monday. So we'll have a full evening next Monday. We'll go right till 9, I imagine. So very good. Next, our Utilities Chair, Mr. Spiras.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have no report for tonight. All right,
thank you. Ordinance and Personnel, Mr. Lorson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ordinance and Personnel has not met, and I have no report.
Okay, our Transportation Committee, Mr. Mosley.
Thank you, Mr. President. Transportation has not met. I just have a couple things. Today was the first day of Ryan Emil in his position at Street Department for Mr. Wheeler over there. I would like to say that, you know, we definitely appreciate when we have any kind of smooth transition like that without a disconnect in service to the city. As well, another thing that I have is Service Department will also continue to do pothole repairs and all that good stuff, as well as sweeping over the next few weeks. I appreciate the communication, you know, from you guys with us related to transportation. With that, I have nothing else, Mr. President.
Okay, thank you. And our Health and Safety Committee Chair, Mr. Carroza.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have no report tonight.
Thank you. And our Planning Committee Chair, Mrs. Widmer.
I have no report tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Our Finance Committee, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a reminder that we have the budget workshop next Monday, as you mentioned, approximately 7 o'clock after the Utilities Board meeting. So everyone be ready. Have fun. That's all.
All right. Thank you very much. Our special committee report, we had a orientation workshop, part one of our orientation workshop. Well, I guess technically part two. We had part one before our first council meeting of the year. So we continued our council orientation. There is a lot of information to acquaint our council members with all the various different operations of the city. We got almost all the way through council's duties at our last orientation, so we still have a good bit to go, and we'll continue that orientation as our schedule permits. And so I'll give you guys a heads up at least of a week or so before we schedule our next session. So, and we'll move on to our administrative reports. Mayor Handworth.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I have several items tonight. First one would be just to mention our employee of the month for March, and that is Mike Miller from Tech Services Department. Mike started his employment in August of 2012 as an Instrumentation and Controls Technician 2. Mike is a University of Akron graduate where he earned his a BS degree in Electrical Engineering. Mike also obtained his LPN from Canton City School of Nursing in 2008. Since hired, Mike's responsibilities have been instrumental in performing calibrations on boiler and turbine process sensing instruments for flow pressure level and temperature measurements, ensuring each are calibrated to industry standards. All stuff that I'm sure all of us understand. Mike is also the go-to guy for the emissions monitors, ensuring the equipment calibrations are in compliance with EPA rules and regulations, and we certainly want to make sure he does that. Mike resides in Massillon with his wife Liz and their three cats. Mike enjoys hobbies such as snow, skiing, but not as often as he used to, it says. Fishing with his dad in Florida, that sounds much better, and repairing antique radios. Mike specializes in the repair of tube-type guitar amplifiers, which is kind of a lost art since the development of solid-state electronics. For Mike's wife, he is the Star Trek original series fan and can recite transcripts from nearly every episode. So he's got a wide variety of things going on here. Last but not least, Mike enjoys the 70s and 80s proverbial hairband music while he cruises around in his 1974 Chevy Nova. So lots to keep him busy. And we have not had lunch yet. I think we have that scheduled later in March. Also, I received several calls this week from folks, and it's kind of interesting. We had two of these calls on the same weekend and not in the same location by any means, not by the same people. Where people that live with access from an alley in town or even a shared driveway where the other people or other people near the alley are parking in the alley and leaving their cars parked there for hours and hours at a time. First thing people need to remember is if that happens, call the police. I think nowadays it's probably not the best thing to get in a confrontation with somebody unless you know who the person is and you know you can talk with them. But that would be the first recommendation. We hope people understand that an alley is not theirs. It's a shared item. If it's an alley, it's open to anyone in the city. So those areas need to be kept clean, and Alleys can be used for dropping off or picking up people or unloading groceries or whatever, things like that. But that's supposed to be done, you know, very quickly, and then you move on and clear the alley out. So just to remind people that you need to have a little respect for your neighbors and people that you live nearby. Also, and I'm sure Councilman or Council President Vance will mention, and also Director Redinger, about our trip to D.C., but we did meet with Congressman Gonzalez, Senator Brown's staff, and Senator Portman at the APPA conference, legislative rally in D.C. last week. Good meetings. I think all of them are very interested in what we had to say. Some of the stuff they've heard before, because it's been an issue year after year. And I feel bad for them. I think they do understand the issue for the most part, but there's just so much that they're going to be able to do. But we have to keep getting in front of them and keep presenting things that are important to us and our customers. Well, lastly, I want to just bring up once again the 2020 census that will be coming up pretty soon. If I'm not mistaken, that's April 1st.
Right.
Not sure what made anybody decide that they should do that on April Fool's Day, but April 1st is the first day that that opens up. You'll be getting information about that, so it's not something you have to find out, what do I do? And it's very easy. From all the stuff that I've read so far, they've made the form much easier to fill out. There's only a few questions to fill out. The biggest thing is convincing people to understand it's important to do, and it's important for a lot of reasons that people generally wouldn't realize. And I'll read the five things that they state on the back of this flyer. It says, everyone counts. The population count is used to determine where new schools and hospitals are needed and where to add public safety resources. So if people don't count, our numbers are low, then according to federal government, we don't need as much grant money and so forth that other people would get. It's about fair representation. Population determines the number of representatives in the U.S. Congress. So if our people aren't counted, we don't have as much representation there. It's important for jobs. Businesses use Census Bureau data to decide where to build factories, offices, and stores, creating more jobs for those communities. So again, if somebody's looking to build a factory someplace, or an industry, or a new shopping center, it's important for them to find out what kind of population is around there, how many people. It's important about housing. Real estate developers and city planners use the census plan to improve neighborhoods. And lastly, it's confidential. And that's the one I think that's still a problem for lots of people. They feel like it's Big Brother snooping in their business and everything else. The people that work on the census actually were here. One of them came and talked to us at a council meeting. They're under strict regulations about that. That is not public information other than the information that you're giving them, just the count. So, but it's federal law protects your census responses. The answers you give can be used only to produce statistics. By law, an individual's information cannot be shared with immigration enforcement and other law enforcement agencies or used to determine eligibility for government benefits. So I don't know if that actually eases anybody's concerns, but I think that is the fact. And the important thing for us to remember is federal dollars, the more people get counted, the more we have the ability to get grants and so forth. So that'll be coming up pretty soon. And that is all I have for tonight. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Our Safety Service Director, Mr. Wheeler.
Thank you, Mr. President. The new air compressor for the fire department has been delivered. Installation is ongoing. Expected to be completed this week. It actually also gave them an opportunity to do some painting in that room that probably hasn't been done in a number of years as well. We have received a build number for the new fire engine with expected delivery in late January, early February of 2021. And believe it or not, spring is indeed in the air. Service Department is working on ball field preparation as baseball and softball seasons will be kicking off very soon. They're also cleaning up the compost center, cleaning up the cemetery, and beginning to prepare for the mosquito larva control program. And that's my update for this evening.
Thank you. Any questions? All right, we'll continue. Our Utilities Director, Mr. Brenniger.
Thank you, Mr. President. Not too many items. I just wanted to bring Council up to speed on the fact that the electric utility, the power plant, did receive its Title V operating permit. That's basically its driver's license. So it's a permit to operate over the next 5 years. We go through roughly about a year and a half renewal process in order to do that. All of our utilities are license or have operating permits issued by the state and federal EPA, and we received ours about a week and a half ago. As the mayor mentioned, we were in Washington last week. I did pass out a couple of the position papers that we spent some time talking with our elected folks. As the mayor said, you go in without super high expectations. I know before we walked in there, the staff at APP reminded us that there were over 12,500 bills introduced by this Congress, and less than 100 were passed. And of those 100, about half of those were like must-pass bills, like the budget, things along that line. So that's why we only go in with a short grocery list. So the two items that you have in front of you are what we really focused on, those mainly being the issues that we deal with on the transmission side of our business world. These are costs that we don't have any control over. These are costs all imposed on us by the transmission system operator and the regional transmission system owners. And as you can see by the charts there, those red bars are the fees that we pay on an annual basis. There's some history going back there. The green are some offsets that we receive at the power plant as long as we're operating during some of the peak periods. And our message there, where these fees are just going out of control, they go up by double digits every year, and there's really no incentives out there or oversight when it comes to determining where these projects are. Those costs are directly passed on to our customers. They are not subsidized by the utility or the government or the state. The other item in there, and you've heard me talk about this before, was the deals with the Build America bonds that we took out when we embarked on the purchase of the Prairie State Coal Plant as partial owners, and when we decided to build the four hydroelectric plants down along the Ohio River. We entered into those projects during the time of the last recession. Build America bonds were offered by the federal government as an incentive to reinvest in the United States. There were some promises made with respect to interest rates that made it attractive for us to go down that path versus some other bonding options that we have. And you fast forward a little bit, you throw in a couple of federal sequestrations, and all of a sudden some of those tax credits have been taken away from us. We're about halfway through that sequestration period, and those additional interest payments have cost our customers $1 million so far. They will cost us an additional $1 million if something's not done before that. And our total membership is exposed to about $74 million. We've been looking for some federal fixes for that. They are reluctant to do that because it kind of opens up a Pandora's box. You give one group a break, and there's others standing in line. So we've been pursuing some other avenues with the executive branch, talking with some folks with respect to the IRS. We've also garnered some support from other municipals in other states, and we basically asked our two senators to sign on to a letter that will help maybe open up the doors for some other other ways to restore those credit to us. I doubt if we'll see anything retroactive for that, but it is a mechanism that has a less political tone to it, but it does require a little bit more support from Congress, so we're hoping our two state senators will take the lead on that, and we can get a little bit more momentum on the Senate for that. So that's what we spend a majority of our time talking about. The only other item I just wanted to mention is coming up May 13th, I think I mentioned this last city council meeting, we have another legislative opportunity in Columbus with our state elected officials, and that'll be May 13th, and that is during the weekday. That is, I believe that's on a Wednesday from 10 till 3, and that's another opportunity to take any of our elected officials or our board members, some staff down to Columbus, and meet with our state representatives down there. Right now, the governor is slated to come and talk to us during that meeting, and we're also going to have some folks there from Jobs, Ohio. So that's a date that I'll just put out there for placeholders. We get a little bit closer to that, I'll have some more information for you. But if you have some interest in that, just let my office know. And there is one thing that we are watching at the state level. The legislature is looking at how municipalities use enterprise funds to support economic development issues. That seems to be garnering a little attention. We're not exactly too sure why that is right now, but that could come back and have some play into how we fund some of our economic development functions here. So AMP and our state municipal association, OMEA, is following that work for us at the state level. And as we learn a little bit more about that, we'll report out a little bit more. If that requires some action on our part of this council, we'll certainly let you folks know about that too. That's all I have tonight, sir.
Thanks. Thank you. It is concerning, as the utilities have been a big part of our economic development work here and funding that. Here in Orville, I think we see a lot of benefit from that. So.
Well, we have a number of programs that support that, as well as boots on the ground effort there. So we'll just have to see what's driving that. We really don't know where the interest is, but anytime somebody from Columbus wants to come in here and meddle in some of our good works, we're a little sensitive to that.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, thank you. Our finance director, Ms. Strimlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. 2020 appropriations are on first reading this evening. I'll provide a brief recap when that resolution is introduced. As Councilman Wilson mentioned, we do have a workshop scheduled for next week where we'll go over those appropriations in pretty good detail. But if you have any questions between now and then, feel free to give me a call if there's any additional information you'd like to see. Just let me know.
Thank you, and I believe I misspoke then in my email to Council last night. I talked about the 2021 budget. That process will begin probably around June, I imagine, right?
Well,
yeah.
Yes.
So I got a little ahead of myself.
That's okay.
All right. Thank you. Our law director, Mrs. Kirk-Bryan.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have no report this evening.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'll mention our trip to D.C. as well. I think it's a very educational, informative trip if you're ever able to go. Mr. Eisenhower is an excellent host. And you'll learn a lot about our utilities and about issues that affect every one of our ratepayers. As you mentioned, our ratepayers have paid an additional $1 million in transmission costs that we really question the necessity of those transmission costs. As these utilities are able to continue building out their infrastructure, they get a guaranteed return of investment, so it's a way for them to have a guaranteed profit. You don't get that very often in businesses. I'm sure businesses you're involved with, you don't get a guaranteed profit very often. These utilities have the opportunity to do that simply by building more infrastructure, and they pass that cost along to us. So that issue was a big one that we were discussing with them. So it's just a good education to learn what's going on. I would encourage you, if you're able to get the day, to go down on the 13th, be similar kinds of things as we talk about more issues facing our utilities there. You have a chance to meet our elected representatives and also representatives from other communities that are involved in public power as well. Medina is one of those. Dover is another community that's relatively close to. So anyway, good opportunities there. And it's probably a good thing that they only passed 1% of all the bills they entered into that manage. So, all right, very good. We will move on to old business, and I see we have none. And so we'll move to new business then. Mr. Lorson.
Resolution 1120. I move this resolution be placed on first reading.
Second, Mr. Mosley. Then we'll need a roll call vote.
Lorson?
Yes.
Mosley?
Yes.
Carosa?
Yes.
Whitman?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Hanwerk?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Resolution 1120. A A resolution to make appropriations for current expenses and other expenditures of the City of Oroville, State of Ohio, during the fiscal year ending December 31st, 2020, and declaring an emergency.
Very good. And of course, an emergency simply means it would go into effect immediately rather than waiting 30 days. Any comments or questions? Yes.
I'll just make a few comments. The total appropriations that we're proposing for 2020, total $69 million. Approximately $54 million has been allocated for the enterprise funds, $8 million for the general fund, and $7 million for the remaining tax-supported funds. We did make some changes from the 2020 budget that we prepared last June. For the utilities, those are in the form of the working capital transfers. We made some modifications. We also changed some capital projects, and there were also some significant changes in purchase power, coal, and natural gas, and that's due to our change in operations that we're continuing to work on settling into a regular mode of operation there. On the tax-supported side, the major changes we made were to the grants and capital improvements, and also capital expenditures, one of those being the fire truck. We made allocations for that. I'll discuss all of those and go over each of the line item categories for you so you have some idea what is included in each of the departments next week. But if you have any questions, again, feel free to call me.
Very good. So the final expenditures for this year, we'll be discussing that on Monday. All right, is that a, we're not passing that because we have second reading next Monday?
Meetings.
Yeah, very good. All right, so we'll move on to the next item.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ordinance A-20, I move this ordinance be placed on first reading.
Mr. Carrozza seconds. And we need a roll call vote.
Carrozza?
Yes.
Whitmer?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Hanworth?
Yes.
Asparas?
Yes.
Lorson?
Yes.
Mosley?
Yes.
Ordinance A-20. An ordinance approving the editing and inclusion of certain ordinances as parts of the various component codes of the codified ordinances of Oroville, Ohio, and declaring an emergency.
Very good. Mr. Wheeler did send a memo just saying this is a very standard housekeeping kind of thing. Any additional comments?
It is indeed, just to summarize the memo, every year is the codification process of all prior legislation from 2019. Also, the codification of any Ohio revised code changes that are noted in our codes that are affected as a result of state changes are included in those. I was looking through last year's legislation, very few changes on the city's behalf that are in the code. Not sure what the Ohio revised code changes would be, but annual housekeeping item, we're required to do it. You're welcome to take it three readings if council would like to do that, but this is something that we do every year about this time.
Very good.
Given that these are ordinances and resolutions that we passed already, it's simply entering them into code, I move that the rules, regulations, and statutes requiring the reading of an ordinance on three separate days be suspended.
I think Mr. Mosley seconds that. I need a roll call vote for that.
Wilson?
Yes.
Hanmark?
Yes.
Asparas?
Yes.
Lorson?
Yes.
Mosley?
Yes.
Carrozza?
Yes.
I move ordinance A-20 be adopted as read.
Mr. Wilkins, Wilson seconds.
Wilson?
Yes.
Hanmark?
Yes.
Asparas?
Yes.
Lorson?
Yes.
Mosley?
Yes.
Carrozza?
Yes.
Whitmer?
Yes.
Thank you very much. That concludes our regular business for tonight. Now we have a special treat for us as we'll get a police department annual report from Chief Burkhart. He's leaving.
How's it going, Travis?
Good, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Want to tell me what happened
here? Yeah. Yeah, I. For council meeting? They always have to
outdo everything.
Now you're going to have to maintain it up for game.
I mean, there's no camera here, so I didn't know. I got away with it.
Stayed on the camera.
I can stay on the camera. I can share. You've got nothing on partner.
Guys in the big TVs.
We're going to watch this here.
Is this one
going to
have
see
a high-tech wheel?
No, I don't think there's any problems.
That's right. That's right.
It is more fun that way.
Why are they have that much screen?
The one posted to the city website.
That's a real fun.
Well, we haven't got the bar set yet.
Yeah, we have no bar.
Can you see okay, or do we need to dim the lights? Looks good? Okay. All right. Well, good evening. I'm Chief Matt Burke, back with the Police Department, and this is the annual report for 2019 of the Police Department. This is our current roster. We had 16 officers, 16 sworn members last year, and K-9 Freddy, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about K-9 Freddy here shortly in another slide. I have to excuse my voice, I'm just getting over. I hear a few of you coughing as well. It's been a rough last few days with this, whatever's going on. This is K-9 Freddy, and Freddy has been with us since 2012. Those are the activities that he's done. A big portion of what Mike Smith's responsibility as handler is with this dog is he cares for the dog 24 hours a day, and they do a tremendous amount of training. And a lot of times we'll get requests from the school districts or outside agencies who have a stop just outside Wardville. Sometimes we have, maybe federal or other agencies come into town and they need assistance. And Freddie's been a great asset to us over the years. Freddie's been with us for a total of, he's in his eighth year. As you can see here, he will be retiring later this year. And I believe we'll be coming to City Council for an ordinance so that Mike Smith could acquire him for, I believe the price would probably be grand total $1. If I can come up with that, I might have to loan me $3/4, but I'm willing to do that based on everything he's represented over the years to us. OVIs. We had 26 OVI arrests this past year. We did not have any underage consumption OVI arrests. That means we didn't have anybody under the age of 21 years old that was arrested for OVI. That's good. We did have one underage consumption arrest. That's really low for historical, if you can imagine. But I don't necessarily think that alcohol is as prevalent as it used to be. I think kids are involved in some other stuff. I think alcohol used to be a lot bigger thing, but younger people today are involved in some other activities, and alcohol isn't necessarily what it was many years ago. The highest test we had, that is extremely high. To be functional, now that's not the highest, that's not record-setting high. We've seen a 0.4 or something in the past, but a 0.314 is astoundingly high. It's almost where you have a significant medical concern about that person's well-being at that height. So just imagine that person operating a motor vehicle when the point, one third of that is the legal limit. Did a little bit different graphic this year to show you kind of the different things that we deal with, the different types of reports. Instead of just doing the Part 1 crimes, which is what the FBI measures, I included all of those, but I included some other ones as well to give you kind of a better, broader snapshot of the different types of things that we investigate. Now, when you see this one, it can be a little bit alarming. It's not abduction in the sense that you think of an abduction. It's abduction unlawful restraint. So typically this would be a situation where you may have a roommate situation where they're having a dispute and the person wants to escape to call 911 or whatever. That's what that means. But these shaded numbers here, those represent the lowest numbers over the past three-year period. Well, as you can see, that means that you can just look at the graphic and see that 2019 was a very successful year in terms of criminal investigative reports. Charges, I'm going to flip over here so I can see a little bit better. You can have the reason you see a higher number of charges than you see reports is some reports have multiple charges to them. So we had 595 charges in 2017. That elevated to 725 charges in 2018, and then we dipped back down to 450 charges this past year. And then reports mirror that graphic. 414 reports in 2017, 470 reports in 2018, and 408 reports in 2019. So those are good, and I'm going to show you where these things stack up historically too, because sometimes when you just look at a 3 or 5 year snapshot, you don't get a real good perspective of where we've been historically, so you're going to see that here shortly. Self-initiated field activities. Crime prevention reports are crime prevention cards. This is something we started a handful of years ago. It's a community policing effort, and this is something where if a citizen receives one of these things, sometimes they'll get a phone call and they wonder if they've done something wrong because they'll get this card left on their car or on their porch or wherever. You've not done anything wrong if you've received a crime prevention card. What that is just a police officer who observes something, maybe a bicycle left in the yard, your garage door left open. Your parents had one of those one time and they made a phone call to me and wanted to know what they needed to do. Close your garage door would be my first suggestion, but you don't have any fine from the police department. So that's something we've been doing for quite a while, and officers have even taken the initiative of checking cars and making sure that the doors are locked in cars. So you might find one of those on your windshield. That doesn't mean that you have a parking ticket or anything. Park patrols. We have definitely emphasized officers just being visible in the park. We've come so far in the last decade and a half in making the park enjoyable and a safe place for people to be. The presence of police officers there, and now we've got park security cameras down there. It's just a place that is so much better than it has been in many, many years. Maybe I know when I was a young kid that there were parts of the park you shouldn't be in, and there were times you weren't supposed to be at the park, and I don't think we're anywhere close to where that is now. So we do encourage the officers to make sure they're out being visible. Vacation checks. This is something that I encourage people to take advantage of. don't think that you're burdening the police department. I actually want, we want people to ask for the officers to come check the house. I'd much rather find out that we checked your house a handful of times while you were on vacation for a week than for you to come home and find a broken out window or kicked in back door. So by all means, you can see we did 896 vacation checks, and we're very much happy to do those because that helps us out too. Traffic stops, another good year, 1228 in traffic stops, and we're going to talk about traffic accidents and how traffic accidents in a way drive what we do with our traffic enforcement. Security checks, again, business security checks, another good year, 1247 there. Okay, so here's what I was talking about. Now, this is juveniles, and this is juveniles taken into custody. This past year, we have 36 juveniles that we took into custody. We hit rock bottom a couple of these years. I mean, you're not going to get less than 8 kids. But look at this over here, where we were at in 2004. And the only reason I stopped at 2004 is that's the last years that I have annual reports for that I have reliable numbers that I can plug in there. I can tell you anecdotally from the 90s, we were higher than that in the 90s. But this was the last year where I could find numbers that I could depend on that were part of the annual report that I could publish. But look at the, and I'm going to talk about it in just a second, but just note, right in here. And then we're going to talk about what may have happened. This is the adult. The adult side. Look at us, we're at 121. Now I do distinctly remember that there was a year that we had over 500 arrests. Late 90s, it was 98, 97. 364 was the high. That was back in 2009. Again, I'm mentioning 2009, and you're seeing that something happened after 2009. And then this year, 121. We pretty much in recent years kind of stabilized. You saw with the juveniles and with the adults right in that area right there. And some of these are warrants. In fact, a good number of these are warrant arrests. That's included in that arrest number. That's not just all physical arrests. So, traffic crashes. Okay, so I talked about a minute ago about our traffic enforcement. We had 103 traffic crashes. That's outstanding. Considering the number of, I'm saying that because people have done a good job driving and the amount of construction that we've had in town, there's times when it feels like, when we had High Street or a lane was down in it and we would get a lot of complaints from citizens that about the driving. And I'm not saying those complaints weren't warranted, but we had one crash, every third day. The number one spot, by nobody, shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. I don't think any of these would be a surprise. 57, where you're going to have the highest volume of traffic, is where you would expect to have the highest crashes. High Street, Crown Hill Market. So those numbers are really, really outstanding. I did find an interesting statistic in looking at our crash totals. Again, diving back in time to see if we've emphasized seatbelt compliance. You get bombarded with buckle up and all of these things. And we were at 85% seatbelt compliance out of these traffic crashes. I would have expected that number to be higher. And we were at 89% as a community back in 2010. It doesn't really compute that we would be going the wrong direction. But nationally, this is almost dead on nationally. 85% you get in the car and you buckle up. I mean, it's been that way for years, but apparently there's still 15% of the population that want to take that risk. Top hours for traffic crashes in Orville in 2019 was between 11 in the morning and 2 p.m. Not terribly surprising. I guess you might think maybe mornings, but 11 to 2, but here's what we're talking about. We're talking about one crash every 3 days, and actually when you look at what day of the week, it's minuscule, the difference. So, you know, 1.2 on a Sunday, 1.4 on a Thursday, and 1.2 on a Friday. The rest were one or right around one. Service calls. Now, this is police and fire. But you can see even the service calls, along with the criminal reports, along with the arrests, even service calls were down in 2019. I thought it would be interesting to show, as far as I got this data from the WARCOG, how much service we use from the WARCOG compared to the other partner agencies, being Worcester and Ashland. Here you've got Worcester had 30,000 calls, we had 12,000, and Ashland had 27,000. That's pretty close to population breakdown. It's really pretty close. Worcester's about 27,000 people, and or 8,000, and Ashland is right around 20,000, so pretty proportionate. Training seminars. So what this represents over here are what each individual member of the department went through as far as training seminars. Over here is a separate thing that we started this past year. We enrolled in online training from the Virtual Academy and most recently from Lexipol, a Police One Academy. And this has been outstanding. This has been fantastic. We're able to get relevant training, and I don't have to get people out of the schedule, send them off places, pay for hotel, pay for travel, pay for fuel, pay for food. All of that we're able to accomplish. And look at the number of these different training courses that most of all of us had everything on here. I mean, there's a few that were just for one individual officer, but all of that training in addition to what you're seeing over here as well. So that has been very happy with that. We started Virtual Academy about a year ago exactly, and then we added the other one. And it's been great to get us to a lot of different training where we don't even have to leave. The Ohio Collaborative. This is the Ohio Collaborative Community Police Advisory Board. Ohio started this in about 2016, where they were putting out standards for what law enforcement agencies should have as far as policies and practices and procedures. And about a year ago, we took the plunge and applied to be a member of the Ohio Collaborative. And just a couple weeks ago, I got a notice that we have a provisional certificate to be certified. And what I'm going to show you here next are the different policies that the Ohio Collaborative, basically they provide these policies so that every agency consistently has these policies. So if you're in Orville and we're part of this, and Worcester's part of this, and Akron and Columbus, we would all have the same policies. And this is a group down in Columbus that it's kind of a best practices group. So the areas include body-worn cameras, use of force, use of deadly force, hiring and recruitment, vehicle pursuits, bias-free policing, internal affairs, and community engagement. So I went past that one, but all of those are different policies that they provide to us, and we adopt them, and then they measure to see that we are in compliance with those policies. So when you get that certificate that says that you're a member of the Ohio Collaborative, it means that you are practicing best practices in those key areas. TIP 411, this is something we've had for a number of years. It's been fantastic. A lot of times we've got some tips that have led to some big cases being solved, some difficult cases, a lot of times warrants being picked up. Very simple. You can download the app at the App Store, either Android or iPhone. Or if you don't want to have the app, you can simply text to 847-411, And in the body of the text, just type in OPD and then the rest of your message, and we'll receive it. I do want to emphasize, though, some people do use when something's unfolding, and it's really not meant for that. It's really meant to pass along information. It's not a replacement for 911. If you see something that is happening and it's unfolding in the moment, you really should call and talk to somebody, because that's the best way for us to know exactly where something's happening is through the 911 system. And my last slide is our Officers of the Year. We recently selected, and we had a tie once again, which I consider that to be a good thing. When you start having ties and you start having a lot of your a lot of variety in who's selected as Officer of the Year, I see that as a very positive thing. Ryan Mace is a first-time selection of as an Officer of the Year, and Corey Shane, he shares this honor for a second year. So both of them are outstanding, very proud, both of them. That's our future right there. We're looking at whenever you see our Officers of the Year, a lot of times they're the ones who are going to be standing up here someday and giving presentations. So these two guys did an outstanding job this past year. So with that, that concludes the PowerPoint portion. Does anybody have any questions for me?
I saw the disorderly conduct and drugs were the two biggest decreases in crimes from the matrix. What constitutes a disorderly conduct? Is that more of a public?
Well, a lot of times alcohol can be a component of it. Disorderly conduct, there's a provision of it where if you're intoxicated and you create a risk of physical harm to yourself, like you're so intoxicated that you're falling down drunk. And those used to be really common back in the day. By the time the bars closed, you could deal with that. Disorderly can be that a person is ignoring warnings from a police officer to cease and desist their behavior. They're using profanity. They're threatening behavior, those types of things. So there are, you know, again, there's two varieties usually. One of them has an alcohol component to it, and the other one is just a failure to maintain peace and order. You can even have a disorderly conduct if you're playing your music too loud and your neighbor's upset with you at 2 o'clock in the morning. That would be an option, would be a disorderly conduct citation. You had another part of that question.
I just was looking at the number
of drugs.
The drugs were another, but those were the top two. It looks like the biggest decline.
I don't know that we had an issue in the middle of the summer last year where there was a halt in the ability to prosecute marijuana cases. I didn't dive into the numbers to be able to tell you that had that much of an impact on it, but it had some impact. There's no question it had some impact, because once you lost the ability to prosecute for marijuana because there was no way to test due to the hemp, back in the middle of summer, right around August, the state of Ohio legalized hemp overnight and threw us all into a tizzy. There was lots of newspaper articles. We were scrambling to figure out what are we going to do. There's no presumptive test. Your canine cannot tell the difference between hemp and marijuana. So it definitely, without question, had some impact. I don't know. I can't give you a firm number on what impact that did, but it would have had an impact on our ability to detect marijuana.
You had mentioned 2009, 2010, there was a drop-off.
That's right.
I don't know if I missed it, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because okay. I would have really missed a great opportunity to kick myself.
Okay.
I don't know how much of an impact. Again, law enforcement's just that way. You just may not necessarily know what you prevented or what caused something. 2009, we passed the nuisance ordinance in Oregon. And that, I don't know that I can attribute everything that we saw, but all I can do is show you what the sheriff's. And, you just see a tale of two different time periods, pre-nuisance and post-nuisance. And I don't know. I mean, those numbers are pretty objective. You know, reports are reports and arrests are arrests. And you just see a very significant, you saw that, it went out twice. And somebody actually pointed out to me within the department and said, hey, look at that, it matches up with where the nuisance ordinance came into effect. So it was very interesting. And that's, you know, that's kudos to City Council for, you know, having the will to pass that ordinance.
Which by one family to thank for the reason for passing it.
Well, if there's no further question, I do have one other thing I'd like to say. I would like to thank all of you. This was an unusual, I usually, as you can tell, I usually don't work off notes. I usually work off the cuff when I talk. And how I wrap one of these is pretty simple. I'll give you a thank you. But this one is a little bit different because many years ago when I looked at this year, 2020, this would have been or is my 25th year. And I was hired on November 1st in 1995. And in law enforcement, after 25 years, you're eligible for retirement. And for many years, and it's just natural for you to get in the middle of your career, particularly after you hit the 15-year mark and you get what's called vested in your pension system, that means you're going to get some type of a pension, you really circle that date. The reason I'm saying thank you, and particularly to the administration here, is because for me it was a no-brainer all along. November 1st, 2020, I'm gonna retire. I'm gonna head on down the road. But things are going so well right now. I think to myself, you know, you've waited for a really long time to get to this point where things are going so well. And when we talk about we now, at least I can say from my department. When we talk about we're not talking about the police department. We're talking about the city. I've been here a grand total of 28 years. You know, it was great when we would talk about we as a team as just your own department, but we have such great communication and great leadership here that the we part is all of us. So that's really good. So my thank you part is that it's not a no-brainer decision on November 1st. Anything can happen, obviously. I like to be an optimist. I could pick the right six numbers on a Thursday night. But other than that, if I had to make a decision today, I'm very excited to see where we're all going to go in the future. And I know that my wife supports me staying at work, so. But this was, it's been 25 great years, total of over 28. I did this for 3.5 part-time, and we're really poised well. And then great relationships with the fire department and across the board with all the various different departments. So what I like best about this is when we talk about teamwork, it just is natural. And it's not like forced down your throat or something on a wall someplace. It's just natural for us. That's just the way we do things in Oregon. It's all about teamwork. So I love it. And I don't think I'm going to find that thing anywhere else in life. So I'm going to run with it as long as I can possibly do it. So thank you.
Appreciate you.
Thank you.
And that concludes my report.
Steve was over to sweat bullets.
Oh, no, I worked inside on November 1st. I didn't know if his date went that bad or not. I thought I knew the answer already.
I liked your closing remarks there about the team.
And the thing that I've seen since I moved to Orrville in 98 was this community working together as a team. And the administration and all the groups in the community. And I think that's one thing that we need to remember. We're all, you know, interviewed for a job or we're elected to council as an individual, but once we're here, now we're part of a team. And that's how we, that's where our strength lies, and that's how we work together the best. So we just need to take advantage of that team that's available to us and work together that way for the benefit of everybody. So anyway, thank you again. Anybody have anything for the good of the order? Yes, Mr. Orson.
Thank you, Mr. President. A couple things. I'd like to thank Chief Burt Beck. I think that we've benefited, and also former Chief Carrozza, I think we've really, really benefited by continuation of excellent service in a tradition that these guys have worked to build and pass along through the years. And I'm happy to keep you around for a while, Matt. The other thing is this. In the Sunday Daily Record, there was a story about Wayne College. And as you know, Wayne College is a branch of the University of Akron. It sits on a 168-acre campus. And Dean Jared Tudor, who's the dean there now, has asked for community input on what we'd like to see or what we'd like to see happen with the campus, which somewhat suggests to me that there may be something afoot for the campus. So what he has asked is that public and public officials, business people, citizens that use or are concerned about the campus contact him with their ideas or concerns or dreams. So please take the opportunity to do that. You can contact him by telephone, see if I remember the number correctly, 330-683-2010. I should know it. I worked there for 10 years, but it's been a while. Or also through email, and you can find his email on the website. But, you know, please speak up, because we would hate to see decisions made from outside the community on what happens to that campus. It's an incredible community asset, and we need to make sure that we keep it intact or use it in the best fashion to benefit the city.
Anyone else? Yes.
I'd like to thank Brenda Green for stepping in for Clerk Jean tonight as she recovers from her surgery.
Not an easy job.
Brenda did a great job. And 98, talk about championship teamwork. That was our first state championship in football.
Oh, really? 98. That's right. Okay. Yeah. Well, you're welcome, Orville. All right. Very good. Well, we'll need a motion to adjourn.
I'll make that motion.
Mr. Carrozza moves, and Mrs. Whitmer seconds. We'll need a roll call vote, please.
Wilson?
Yes.
Hanwer?
Yes.
Asparis?
Yes.
Orson?
Yes.
Mosley?
Yes.
Carrozza?
Yes.
Whitmer? Yes.
Very good. We are adjourned.
That's too bad. Camera on.
I think it's
That's a new one.
I do remember the he gave us quotes for what we need. Okay. But then he also mentioned that there was this monthly fee that we had not paid. High school girl. I don't know what it was for. My understanding is that they're buying that.
No, I'm talking about
the second year of a friend. You got
that,
my kid.
I don't know what I'm saying. And we really don't know why.
We don't know why they're anymore. Because, for instance,
Can you do next week?
I'm fine with that. So the question is, I guess, is there...
Do you want to come to our house, or what do you want to do?
I was shocked.
That's what they got you on. The installation set it up.
not right away.
See you next week.
All right, yeah. You guys, and then it's kind of like your water line to the town, and then you guys are responsible, is what Jeff Benny's supposed to tell me. Because I went down to make sure that we weren't supposed to be going to something that they let Kathy know. But he said he already let Kathy know everything. I don't think we have needed it.
I guess I wasn't in this more technical thing.
I was kind of a vague answer. Yeah, so, that was surprising too.
Why would we not want it?
Good Lord.
This is my year of a new thing. Trying to branch out.
The Flintstone guy told us we needed it.
Well, maybe. I just don't know why. Not my question.
I don't know either.
I'm not sure why you needed copper there. If fiber was available.
You wouldn't use both? My understanding is we were going to have both.
Is that for redundancy?
We're doing phone.
What? Well,
we're doing phone, internet.
Are you doing faxing? Still doing faxing and that stuff? Because sometimes you need copper for some.
We do fax. We have it at our main office. I assume we have it at the other office.
It might be because of that, some of the other things that you have. But I don't know. I was going to ask Jeff why you needed the copper for.
You said normally you wouldn't expect someone to have copper for that purpose?
Not today.
Yeah. I mean, we're even evaluating that now because of all the faxes we get in. And does it make more sense to tell
people? You need copper for faxes, but not anything else? Because maybe we should just tell people to fax our main office if they're going to fax.
Well,
my
only question is, using copper these days is obsolete.
Okay. Well, that's helpful to know. I'm not saying that
there's 100% replacement for everything there, but for somebody to want to have copper running.